Hi everyone, welcome to episode 3 of the new season of the Wilderness Medic podcast. Today I'm really excited to be joined by my friend Jamie Patson, who I think I first met on some World Extreme Medicine work. And Jamie is a paramedic up in Northumberland, and he's also part of the Northumberland Mountain Rescue Team.
Welcome to the Wilderness Medic podcast. Check out our website at www.thewildernessmedic.com.
Expedition resources, Wilderness Medicine blog, and much more.
So thanks so much for joining me, Jamie.
Thank you very much for having me, Don. It's really exciting to talk to you.
Yeah, it should be very good. And I think today we're going to sort of touch on a few things to do with your work in mountain rescue, I suppose how that's evolved with the pandemic and how things have had to change, and looking at, I suppose, how you juggle that with your normal work. Congratulations on becoming a paramedic as well. That was quite a recent achievement, which is really awesome.
Thanks very much, mate. Yeah.
And you've also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're also now the deputy leader of the mountain rescue team as well.
Yes, that's right. Taking on some more responsibility.
Yeah, excellent. And so you've been involved with mountain rescue, I think, for around a decade now. Is that right?
Yeah. So I first joined the team. I submitted my application just after my birthday in 2010, and then I graduated in the team in the June of 2011, 6 months later. And I was promptly booted out of a Seeking helicopter as a graduation kind of celebration. So yeah,
that's a different one, isn't it? That's pretty cool. And I suppose how did you get involved to start with? Have you always been someone who sort of spends a lot of time in the outdoors doing those kind of activities, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always find this question quite difficult because there was no kind of like light bulb moment where I was like, oh, I'm going to join mountain rescue. I certainly was, I was and still am a climber, surfer, runner, whatever it is, I'm outside doing something. And I just think it was something that kind of drew me to it, being part of the rescue services, etc. And I've kind of gone the same way with my career. Obviously, I joined Mountain Rescue and then kind of came into medicine off the back of that, so becoming a paramedic, mountain rescue certainly had a lot to do with that as well. I think my main kind of influence is probably my mum, who was a nurse. Hello, mum.
Awesome.
So I kind of grew up kind of aware of medicine and what was going on and things like that. So it's certainly in the blood.
Yeah, I guess it sort of has that evolution, doesn't it, I suppose, from spending all your time outdoors and then sort of thinking, you know, what's the next step? And then, as you say, sort of alongside that, moving towards becoming a paramedic and things. And so when you started off in the mountain rescue, was it more of, because I know you are or were the medical officer with obviously the overall medical responsibilities. What did you start off as in the team?
So everyone starts off, you join the team as a candidate, you go through assessments, etc. And then you have to do kind of a at least a year now of trainee kind of preceptorship, as it were, where you come on board, you are a member of the team, but you don't go out on operations and rescues and missions and stuff. You just come to training sessions and you kind of learn all the core skills you need, and then you graduate into the team and then you're a kind of standard team member. But after that, and well, I suppose throughout your training, there's different specializations you can go into, so you can kind of tailor it to what you like and what your skill set is. So whether that's, you know, vehicles and equipment and 4x4 driving and things like that, or obviously the medical side of things, there's the technical rescue side of things with ropes and pulleys and all sorts.
And that's one of the things you quite like doing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I've managed to kind of get myself into most of the specializations now. And they've certainly developed as technology has developed over the last 10 years as well. So we've got drones in the team and drone pilots now, which isn't a specialization I've gone down, but it's pretty cool to have that in the team. That certainly wasn't a thing when I first joined. So it shows how we're kind of moving with the times as well.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. The obviously all the kind of technical obstacles are still important with their drones coming along, and they obviously won't be replacing all of our jobs. But that's pretty clever. And I guess are they equipped with sort of thermal imaging cameras, things like that, to look for missing walkers and things?
So we don't kind of have that level of technology yet. I'm sure we will, though. Again, uh-huh. In the next 10 years, I think it'll be fascinating to see how moved on again. They are just kind of bog standard drones, but a lot of research was done by the Centre for Search Research, which was set up kind of as part of Northumberland National Park Mountain Rescue Team, where they looked at the efficacy and the kind of how bog standard drones and the technology we've got access to at the minute can be quite useful and applicable to our job. And it certainly has come in handy, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting, yeah. And yeah, as you say, over the next 10 years, who knows, maybe everyone will have rocket packs like that guy. And I suppose, so how do you kind of balance the mountain rescue side of things with your day job? Because obviously, you know, being a paramedic is pretty busy. It's a pretty intense job, particularly at the moment and things. And I suppose even pre-pandemic, how did you kind of, you have to have quite an understanding employer, I guess, to sort of also be part of the mountain rescue team?
Again, this is kind of a question I struggle with, how do you do this? I spend a lot of my days off doing things for mountain rescue. I spend a lot of my downtime on breaks at work, you know, answering emails and things like that. It's certainly not all running up mountains and helicopters and flares and stuff like that. It's a lot of, especially as an officer of the team, there's a lot of kind of paperwork and emails and audits and stuff to keep on top of, and responsibilities to keep things running. So I guess it's just kind of you make something a priority if it's a priority to you, and then you fit it in where you can. And I think it's kind of it's almost like an innate thing. If you want to do something and you're motivated to do it, then I think people will find time for what they want to. That's not to say, if, you know, you're struggling for time, that's a negative thing. But and I certainly find myself doing that as well. I certainly haven't. I wouldn't say I've got a great balance of things. But
sort of spinning lots of plates at once, kind of thing.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll take a day now and then and just not spin any of the plates and just think I'm just going to leave this today. It can wait. But it certainly takes a lot of mindfulness and discipline to be able to do that and put it down and walk away for a day.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, that resonates quite a lot, actually. I think you're definitely right. I think if you've got an affinity and kind of like a passion to you know, towards the, whether that's mountain rescue, whether that's something else, that you sort of, you know, you think, okay, well, actually, this is something I really enjoy. I see the benefits of the time I'm putting in. And actually, that's, you know, it kind of reaps its own rewards, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is it. So, again, like I came into pre-hospital care and paramedicine from mountain rescue because I kind of ended that world that way. And like I say, I had an awareness of it. And I think I am the best version of Jamie when I'm doing mountain rescue stuff and paramedicine stuff, and I'm combining the two. Being outside on a mountain and doing some pre-hospital care and doing that to a high standard, it is my passion. So it doesn't feel like a lot of hard work. Sometimes, don't get me wrong, it is, but it's something I want to do, something I enjoy spending time on. I'm kind of personally invested in myself, and I think it's, you know, over the last 10 years, I think it's certainly become part of my identity. It's almost like in the blood, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And having seen you teaching on some of the World Extreme Medicine courses, yeah, you're certainly very enthusiastic. I can tell that you've got a real love about both the mountain rescue side of things and also the pre-hospital medicine side of things as well. And I suppose, how far into the mountain rescue team, you know, your time with them, did you sort of think, you know what, that niggle of mum being a nurse and that kind of whole medicine thing, when did that start creeping up on you, do you think? Or do you think it always sort of been there and lingering in the background?
I think it always kind of been there. My family will tell you stories about me wandering around as a kid dressed up as various iterations of emergency services and things like that. So I think it kind of always been there. And I think when I kind of first, that kind of first got to scratch that itch was when I joined the mountain rescue team and they said, well, and I got involved in that kind of training. And I think it was, I was probably in the team a year or two. And I had left university the first time and was kind of looking for a job. And it was at that point, kind of everything kind of almost fell out of place a little bit. And there was paramedics in the team at the time saying, you know, you really enjoy this. You're kind of good at it. Why don't you go and, you know, push that door and see how you go? And 10 years later, here I am.
Excellent. Yeah, it's all about, I suppose, with all these things, it's kind of opening those doors, seeing where those opportunities get you. And then, you know, they lead to other doors and then you kind of continue on that journey. And yeah, often having sort of inspirational, you know, other team figures and sort of mentors to make a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah. So there was kind of that whole nature and nurture. And then I got involved with World Extreme Medicine and, you know, I met some amazing people through that. Some of my best friends I've met through that. Some awesome people I get to work with, and I learn stuff, you know, when I'm on those courses teaching, I learn off the delegates, I learn off everybody else. And to have that as a kind of thread going through the whole thing has been hugely privileged and hugely inspirational, I think, throughout my whole career. I've pretty much had that going on. And I've always had this awareness of what else is going on. So I'm never sat in the back of an ambulance thinking, oh, I'm a bit fed up. Sometimes that happens, but I always know there's a lot more to, you know, paramedics and mountain rescue, etc., than just that. So that's been quite nice as well.
Yeah, that's really good. And yeah, I certainly echo that. Working on some of those courses, it is great to have that sort of network of like-minded people just to bounce ideas off. And you always sort of come away thinking, I've discussed another expedition or another cool place that I need to sort of add to my growing list or whichever.
Yeah, yeah, never-ending list, isn't it?
It is. And I suppose in terms of, you know, the workload and stuff for people who might be listening and interested in joining their local mountain rescue, and obviously it varies depending on which team you're in at the time of year and things, but I suppose how much of a commitment is it? There tends to be sort of weekly training and things, and then I suppose on top of that, how often do you, I know this is a bit like how long's a piece of string, but I suppose how's your average week, how many call outs might you get?
So as you say, it's very, very variable depending on which team you join and you know what area you're working in, etc. So I can only kind of speak from my experience, and I think Mountain Rescue as well has certainly developed. It's certainly gotten busier over the last few years. So training-wise, obviously the last couple of years, COVID has kind of had a massive impact on things. And certainly in my team, there would be the standard training evening once a month. We'd probably have a couple of exercises or one exercise every month or so. And to be honest, I think if you looked at the numbers and the statistics, we're probably up to like one job a week. But again, it's not just mountain rescue anymore. We've developed so much. So the police will call on us. So the mountain rescue, for those who don't know, are kind of come under the umbrella of the police arm of the emergency services. So they're our calling authority. And they'll utilise us for mountain rescues, obviously. But we'll do urban search and rescue. We will do searches for... not just people, we'll go looking for things. So the work is massively varied, and we've developed in the last few years a water kind of rescue element as well. So I'm going down to do my swift water rescue technician training in a couple of weeks' time.
That's pretty interesting, because I suppose, yeah, as you say, you've seen some of the mountain rescue teams helping out with the flooding and things, haven't you, as well?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be part of the, you know, be able to work in water ourselves, but we'll be part of kind of supporting the local fire and rescue service with rescue technicians and crew for boats, etc. So the opportunities I find that are absolutely endless, you know, from technical rescue to water rescue, the drone element, the communications IT side of things, and then obviously the medicine. It is a fantastic way, again, for medics to kind of come into the mountain rescue and pre-hospital environment and get masses of experience and bring in a skill set as well, which is really useful.
Yeah, that is good, I suppose. Yeah, that there's some really exciting different skills you could gain there. That would also be useful if you then did want to work as a medic sort of on expeditions or other things like that, definitely.
Yeah.
And I suppose the other is cave rescue something that appeals to yourself?
I've certainly been underground. I've never really been involved in any cave rescue. We don't have that. We've got a couple of caves around here, but we've never really had any. We've never had a jobs in it, touch wood. So again, it'd be another kind of area where it would be interesting to delve into and have a look at. And there's certainly, you know, other teams and other areas. I mean, the whole cave rescue organization, which look after that area of responsibility. But that translates really well into, you know, things like working with the heart team and urban search and rescue, etc. So, it's massively, massively varied and interconnected.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose, obviously, we don't want to go into too much detail for specific cases due to confidentiality and things. But I suppose, I'm sure there's sort of some jobs that you've done within mountain rescue that are particularly memorable or have been challenging for different ways. Are there any sort of interesting themes that come up?
So the kind of one that springs to mind, particularly this time of year, is the Beast from the East. So during kind of that week, and it was 3 days in particular for us in the Northeast where things were pretty bad. And we were putting out crews onto our vehicles to cover kind of shifts in a way. So I went out on a vehicle and pretty much didn't then return home for about 15 hours. And we did all sorts of things. So we responded to drivers stuck in the snow. We responded to road traffic collisions. There was crews who had to help an ambulance crew with a lady in labour and bring her down the road. And we went up, so me and my mate Rob, we went up to an A road crossing the border, the A68, at a place called Carter Bar, which is essentially just a big hill where the road comes over. And I think we had 8 or 9 cars with 18 people in, all kind of stuck up there. So just the logistics of that and the kind of skill set from winter mountaineering and polar expeditions brought into basically, you know, doing some kind of improvised rescue stuff and managing those situations was really, really interesting. I think another
one. Yeah, I think I've seen a photo of you standing with the snow up to above your knees or something in
there. Yeah, yeah.
In that one, yeah. I suppose I suppose the theme is that if an extra pair of hands is needed, I guess you guys you sort of have the skill set for most of these sort of events, don't you? And then I suppose through the police and sort of the other networks, you sort of get mobilised, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you've got, you know, the classic mountain rescue jobs where I remember we had a group who'd gone missing at the end of an event, and we found them, and I had nine people in a group shelter. And kind of doing that mass casualty triage, but working out who's coldest and who needs to go first, and how many people can you fit in a Land Rover Defender and stuff. It's certainly not problems you come across in everyday life.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I suppose as a sort of mountain rescue team member, you probably liaise a bit with the helicopter side of things as well.
So we used to have the military search and rescue, and we had RAF Boomer, and they had an aircraft running out of there until 5 or 6 years ago now. And now it's obviously with Bristol and the Coast Guard. So our nearest aircraft now are either Prestwick and Humberside. And the guys are great, but obviously not having an aircraft on our doorstep has definitely had an impact, and we have to be a bit more mindful of times and things like that when we're considering utilising those resources. And then obviously we have to keep up our training with them every year and stay current with the systems and things, which are pretty similar to the military. Some things are a little bit different and obviously have modernised and things like that, but we certainly have picked up a bit of probably about maybe 10, 15 jobs a year where we wouldn't have even been called because the helicopter would have been on scene from Boomer. But now there's a bit more time for them to get on scene. So that certainly had an impact on how we operate and how we do things.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing is obviously, like you're saying, having, you know, making sure you stay up to date, knowing about sort of safety around helicopters, which is obviously is one of your main talks that you like to give. That's very interesting. And I suppose we touched a bit earlier on, I suppose, on the way that COVID has sort of obviously affected training and things like that. And obviously, it's also meant that I suppose if you do need to go and respond to a call out, that you then have to sort of wear a lot of PPE. And how's that impacted on how the team's running?
It's been a ride, to be honest. It's been really interesting. So obviously, as the medical officer, when COVID kind of kicked off and started, my kind of area of responsibility was to help the team kind of get prepared and get sorted for that. So I spent a lot of time standing in a container in the fire station yard where their vehicles are based, fit testing people for masks, doing all that in a COVID safe way. And we ran sessions basically where we got limited members to come down, and we did a bit of an exercise where we did it in slow time, and we walked through what the requirements now and how things would change and what we needed to do differently. And it's been really interesting, really, because I remember those first sessions we did, it was all really new to everybody. Infection prevention control is quite difficult in mountain rescue just because of the environment we're working in. So kind of introducing those concepts, in, you know, respiratory protective equipment as a, you must do this every time now, and having people in white suits and stuff walking around and things like that. There was lots of, there was a massive heuristic element to that. I remember saying to the guys at the start of each of those sessions, look, tonight is going to be really, really frustrating. It's going to feel really, really strange. It's not going to be easy. But that's exactly how you're supposed to feel in this. And just kind of being open and honest and managing people's expectations that we are going to make mistakes. This isn't going to go right. But this is how we're going to do. And it's been quite interesting watching the guys kind of adapt to that. Everyone picked that up really quickly and really well. And then how we've kind of gone through the kind of the learning curve of getting used to all this, and it's almost become second nature, to now, as everyone is, being a little bit fed up with it, and is things going to open up, and still that element of uncertainty. So it would make a fascinating write-up, I think, just the whole psychological and heuristic.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose to an extent at that point, as you say, it was such an unknown. We were sort of learning as we went along. Yeah. I suppose some of the stuff you were gaining from sort of working in the ambulance service, you could then use some of that knowledge and transfer it across to the mountain rescue role.
Yeah, certainly. And it was just all about being totally open and honest and saying, look, guys, I'm about as aware of this disease as you are right now. Yes, I've done a bit of training and I've done this and I've done that, but we're all going to have to learn a lot. We're all going to have to change our minds a couple of times. There's going to be some cognitive dissonance. This isn't going to feel very nice for a while. It still doesn't feel very nice now, to be honest. And I'm still learning things, you know, every day as you do in medicine, about this one thing and how to wear masks and little tricks and things like that. So it'll be interesting to look back on, but it has been, it's been very interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose what advice would you have to people listening who sort of want to get involved with their local mountain rescue team? Anything that you can suggest?
Quite a timely question. We've just finished the kind of recruitment drive up here in Northumberland. We've actually had the most applications ever, I think, this year, and a lot of really strong applications as well. So what I would say is, there's a couple of things which I certainly look for, and we look for in the recruitment process, is that you need to have the skills. You know, your navigation skills need to be like second to none. You know, from being able to orientate a map, etc. You might have. And when we, certainly in my team, when we have a new candidate for training. We will do a hill skills assessment, and we'll take you out on the hill, have a wander around. It's a bit of a nice day, get to know people and stuff like that, meet some of the guys. And then, but we will ask you to take me to certain points, and there won't be the classic kind of path junks and stuff. There'll be little heights and little inlets and things like that. So
proper micro nav.
Yeah. And whatever the weather is, that's the weather on the day. So we've done that in some interesting weathers, and we stay out after dark as well. So it's definitely been comfortable with those skills, being kind of organised and being able to operate in all weathers, in all light conditions, and be kind of confident in your skills as well. Because that's the other thing is that, you know, people turn up for these assessments and they're quite nervous and they make mistakes and stuff. And I think that's absolutely fine. I'm not going to hold that against you. Like, I totally understand. I've been there. Just, you know, relax, enjoy the day kind of thing. But the biggest thing I probably look like, so if your nav is a little bit off or whatever, I think that you can improve on people's skills and you can teach people things. We can make those people better, but the basic building blocks of your personality and who you are are really important as well. So it's about, you know, enjoying yourself, having a laugh and kind of, again, we'll do a few little scenarios where we'll stop and we'll say, right, or we'll come across some team members who we've sent out a bit earlier, and they'll have set up a little scenario and do a little bit of kind of high fidelity stuff where we'll add a little bit of stress into the mix. And I always kind of look for these people who always kind of ask a question where, who would I want to, you know, back me up at 2 o'clock in the morning when it's raining? I'm knackered. They're probably knackered. We've got someone who's quite unwell and a lot of work to do and a long way to go. Who would I want to turn around and be like, right, this is what I've got to do? And are they going to have the kind of resilience and the kind of mental presence to achieve those things? Or are they just going to check out or what?
Yeah, that makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Because I guess you can have all the technical skills in the world, but if you don't quite fit, I suppose, or you're not that person, then that's not going to be so good, I guess. I guess we're kind of getting towards the end now, but I think it would be a shame not to discuss your travels elsewhere, sort of outside of the UK. You always seem to be looking to go to very cold places.
Yeah, so the cold is kind of my natural home as a Geordie, I suppose, but it's just, again, what interests me, my passion and stuff, mountains and snow, so... that's taken me Norway. I've been to Norway. I've lost count how many times. Absolutely amazing place. We go ice climbing every year. I've been to Svalbard and across the Finnmarksvidda up in the north of Norway as well. Out to Greenland, out to Iceland.
It's pretty cool. All places on my list of places to go. And then I suppose your pretty cool achievement of winning the world's toughest Arctic ski race, the Iceman Polar, wasn't it, a few years ago now?
Yeah, so that was in 2016. And I've not had the opportunity to kind of top that as an achievement yet, but we've still done some cool stuff. But that was as part of a team of three. And I have absolutely no shame in saying I was the weakest member of that team, but that experience for me was absolutely amazing. I learned so much about myself. And brought that home and kind of have applied that over the years since. From a physical and mental, emotional kind of limits perspective, I'd gone way past everything I'd kind of previously thought was kind of there. So it was an absolutely awesome experience.
How cold are we talking for that? Like, what did the temperatures go down to?
So this... second and third day on that, we actually got stopped and we had to hunker down in tents for 2 days, which is cool. So my teammate Scott and that, we were basically stuck together for like 48 hours. We did go out skiing in it on the second day just to get the experience. So we were stuck for 2 days in a pit rack storm. So the storm had kind of come down the fjord. I don't really remember any figures from that, but with the wind chill and stuff, it must have been down to at least minus 20. And there's a video out there which shows the wind and the storm. And it, when you watch the video about it, you think that was pretty intense, actually.
It's certainly cold enough, I think. I guess touching on some of those things you mentioned about having that kind of mental resilience in sort of expedition settings or wind settings is quite an important one. And I suppose similar when you're like we touched on, when you're working out in the field, either with mountain rescue or as a paramedic. And there's some quite important lessons we can learn there, I suppose.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wish I'd written them down over the years, but I think the main one is just to kind of keep a cool head and have a sense of humour about stuff. There's been a lot of times, certainly when I've been at my wit's end, and somebody's, you know, just given me a kick and cracked a joke and stuff, and it just, I think I certainly get a lot of energy from that. Having a sense of humour when things are going wrong is really, really important. And I actually asked somebody this very question a few years ago before I went on the Iceman. And I kind of said, look, you've done some interesting stuff. You've done some cool things. Like, how do you, when things were going wrong, like, how do you deal with it? How do you handle it? What's the tricks? And he kind of just like looked at me and was like, well, there's no trick. You just get on with it. And I took that into the Iceman. And to be honest, I've never, ever had any finer advice. It's as simplistic as it is.
It's very pragmatic, isn't it?
If you've got a job to do, or you've got, you know, you're out in the middle of Greenland somewhere, or whatever it is, or you're, you know, stuck up on a third floor of a house in Newcastle City Centre with a really unwell patient, there's a goal to be achieved, and you've got to do some stuff, so you've just got to get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's some very good advice. We were chatting before we started recording. You said you're hopefully aiming to do a session that sort of looks into some of these things in a bit more depth with World Extreme Medicine. Date to be confirmed, is it?
Yeah, so we're just still organising the date for that, but that's going to be probably end of March, early April time, where we're going to look at the kind of me and a couple of other members of Mountain Rescue from other teams, with a lady who's a psychologist. They're going to discuss kind of the psychological elements of mountain rescue work and the kind of areas around that, probably particularly looking at risk, etc. So it should be a good session.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I'll definitely keep an eye out for that. And it's been great to have a chat, because I need to sort of get in with my local mountain rescue. So you've given me a good kind of template, a good plan to kind of build upon. I think the micro nav is probably the one I've got to work on. But it's been fantastic to chat, really interesting. And thanks for taking your time out. I know you have, as we've discussed, two very busy jobs. So thanks for joining me, Jamie.
No, thank you very much for having me, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
If you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, then check out our website, www.thewildernessmedic.com. If you're interested in being a guest on a future episode or writing a blog for us, then do get in touch, and don't forget to follow us on social media. Until next time, take care.